Okay, cool. So I'm secretly happy when anything goes long before me because I talk very quickly. And so this way I'll be like getting us back on time and it's a good excuse. So no, like feel free to ask more questions. Okay, great. So I decided for this talk because I wasn't sure exactly what the audience, I mean, I had some sense of who the audience would be, to decide to go a little bit rather than just technical celestial holography stuff, to try to theme what I would normally give for a like colloquium-ish talk into the theme of the panel that's coming afterwards, hence the cryptic title. Great, and reference to Disney or whatever, sorry. Okay, so as a brand new baby faculty here, I am very happy to be working on two things. So one is starting up the Celestial Holography Initiative, which is the way that we structure the startup funds here, basically, which has been very, very fun to start. And then also this next summer, we're gonna be hosting the annual conference for string theory. So I decided to use this talk as an excuse to try to do some of the work I need to be doing for that organization by October instead of too late. So the goal of the talk is gonna try to eventually fit into this forest for the trees and see how the stuff at the CHI fits into strings. Maybe, we'll see if we get to that. Okay, so first steps first, I want to at least try to give the elevator pitch style version of like what is celestial holography, what's this thing that this lovely initiative that Perimeter's sponsoring trying to do. So we always try to appeal to like these bigger questions that have been around for much longer than any of us has signed, or even alive, which is we want to understand quantum gravity. Ooh, okay, so that's our big motivation, and later I'll come back to who gets to say that we're there doing that. And then, of course, okay, now we have quantum gravity, we have Einstein, we have Hawking as different heroes we can try to point to as far as, I guess, precedents that we're building up on top of. So the thing that celestial holography is starting from is, say, from our understanding of black hole thermodynamics, we think that quantum gravity should be described by some lower dimensional theory without gravity, and so holographic principle is going to be basically our mantra. Another more recent hero, Juan Malacena, gave us a very concrete top-down example from string theory of holographic duality, which is the ADS-CFT. Now we can take that and we can say, nah, I care about experiment, even though I'm a theorist, and I want to think about trying to apply some holographic paradigm to experiments. Now from length scales of collider experiments up to something you measure at LIGO, we can pretend the universe has zero cosmological constant, and so the cosmologist might have something to complain about, but I want to apply holography to asymptotically flat spacetimes, so that's the goal. Okay. Now, another heroine that we bring in here is, what am I going to do if I don't have some sort of like top-down model to give you my 3+1 dimensional asymptotically flat spacetimes and know what the dual theory is? Then, basically, my way of working is to start from the ground up. And in the bottom up, we basically can look for symmetries and say that those give us more constraints. And so that's how we go about trying to build up this flat space hologram. So just to keep in mind, what we're looking at is, in some sense, the object that we're looking at is just the S matrix. So it's the thing that goes into what you would compute when you want to see what you're going to see at CERN. But we want to keep in mind that it's not just like opening up your quantum field theory textbook and computing your S matrix for QED or QCD or whatever, but rather thinking of it as also applying to theories with gravity. So we can also just phrase the scattering problem more holographically by always merging in our space-time picture of what we're doing. So we're preparing an in-state, and we want to find the overlap with a given out-state after you time evolve from infinite past to infinite future. And normally when you set this up, you think of, well, I'm here at a given time, I can wait a long time and see what's changed in that time frame. But if we zoom out and look at the large-scale structure of space-times that are asymptotically flat, then what we see is that the notion of going to infinity is a bit different. So you can go to infinity along a time-like direction. If you waited forever, you'd go up to future time-like infinity. Similarly, if you're massive, you'd come from past time-like infinity. Or if you're a wave packet that's massless and you send some signal out, you're gonna actually reach a different notion of infinity, which is null infinity. And so scribe minus and scribe plus are past and future null infinity. And because we're interested in massless scattering, in particular, if we're interested in what you can see from perturbation theory for like quantum gravity, or treating quantum gravity at first as just Einstein-Hilbert action, we're interested in massless fields, and so we can capture their initial and final data at null infinity. And so already, by just viewing the in and out, the S matrix, as correlators at the boundary, we're a little bit closer to ADS-CFT. So one of the first things that was fun coming out of Strominger's group is this notion of the fact that you can already learn something just by looking at the infrared and looking at symmetries. And so there's a kind of beautiful, I don't want to use the word unification, but like coming together of ideas that were really around for a long time. In the 60s, you had Weinberg looking at soft theorems. So I have some scattering process, and I say, what's the likelihood of having another soft, low-energy emission? And those are really just related by a Fourier transform up to some understanding of the probability distribution for the emitted photons to something you can go out and try to measure. And the fun thing is you actually will be able to measure some of these things soon. What's cute about it, so these memory effects are basically like DC modes. So say I have two masses and they're wiggling around because a gravitational wave passed through. At some point, like where do they end up? Do they restore back to where they were before? Or do they end up a little bit displaced from each other? And these guys are very far away, so in some sort of like far field approximation, you actually do have like these net effects. And they capture basically what you would think of as like Gauss's law. So like, it's kind of amusing that sometimes in their waveforms, because and I don't do numerical relativity, but apparently, using waveforms that actually keep track of the memory effects are helpful, so that's kind of cool. That's something I'm starting to appreciate more. That's like, it's useful, whoa. Okay, great. So then, for me, I was interested in this like sublating soft theorem that basically answered the following question. So, whatever representation you want to look things at, you have people who are looking at experiments, talking about memory effects, or maybe like Fino for that, or you have people just looking at basically what normally is a problem of the fact that basically the things that you're computing, once you include very low energy radiation, give you these divergences which exponentiate to zeros, and you're like, okay, is this object even well defined? But if I wanted to have this kind of boundary scattering problem, I want to have an S matrix and not just like probabilities coming from squaring and inclusive cross sections. So there's a lot of fun problems that one run into. And another fun thing about it is by just understanding how these things are connected, you can look for new examples. So this group out in Belgium, like basically was building off of this asymptotic symmetry analysis that was done in the 60s by Bondi, Vandenberg, Metzner, and Sachs, and said, well, okay, now that we like 2D CFTs a lot more in the future, compared to in the 60s, like we don't need everything to be well-defined on the sphere. Who cares if we have punctures, like, right? Okay, so once you're able to, I guess, generalize what you are looking at, you can have more fun. So they proposed an extension of the asymptotic symmetry group. There was also then a Freddy over here found a new sublating soft theorem with Strominger, and we could find a new memory effect from that. So it's just fun how sometimes when you see things different ways, you can learn something about all of them. Okay, so the whole point of celestial CFT is that basically, not only do you have some sort of like boundary correlators and some weird notion of instead of my boundary being time-like and that cylinder I was drawing near one, I have now these null components and also something I have to resolve at time-like infinity or spatial infinity. But the point of this celestial holography program that Perimeter is bringing lots of people in to do is that there's somehow a natural dimensional reduction of that boundary just to the celestial sphere. And this is very much literally like, look at the night sky. How are we encoding scattering on the night sky? So celestial sphere, very much literally what you think. Okay, so now that I say I have this conformal boundary and I have a reason to want to reduce this like cone to this cross section, which is the sphere, the first thing one could do is, well, what happens when I do my Poincaré transformation to the sphere? And so in particular, we have the Lorentz group, so everybody loves special relativity. And when you do a Lorentz transformation of Minkowski space, you're warping the celestial sphere, and so you're doing global conformal transformations there. And for the example of the sublating soft graviton theorem, those actually turn into local conformal transformations, which is the fun part. But so this celestial holography program is proposing a duality between scattering and asymptotic flat spacetimes and a CFT living on the celestial sphere. So I've spent this little elevator pitch just trying to define the C, H, and I there. And some fun things that have come up, and you can see where Perimeter has been a part of it for a bit now, are as follows. So I mentioned the new soft theorem, thanks to Freddie and Andy. These new observable memory effects were where I started having fun in my PhD. Basically, cool things about rephrasing these soft dressings to talk about these IR finite S matrix instead of just inclusive quantities. And similarly, you can try to apply these symmetries to constrained black hole evaporation. You're starting to learn about maybe certain analytic structure in this new basis for like what a quantum theory of gravity versus a EFT would behave like. Cool stuff. Collinear limits become your celestial OPE, so you can ask questions like, how would I try to bootstrap the S matrix from soft and collinear limits? That's the way you would phrase it if you're trying to say, this is a 2D CFT. There's now, even beyond what you can see from that triangle and like these soft theorems, Just sticking with this notion of like shortened multiplets in these 2D CFTs, you have a whole tower of symmetries that goes really beyond the original asymptotic symmetry analysis, and Laurent's been a valuable part of that, and Anna, who just was doing a postdoc here. And similarly, you can try to connect to twister theory, and now there's some talk of possible top-down constructions from twister holography, thanks to Kevin. So a lot of the faculty here have been helping with this, and so it's a very fun and natural place to be doing this. And so I would say that that checks off my list the subtitle of the talk. So I was saying I'm going into the woods through the trees. I haven't told you what that means yet. And I got gravity, my quantum gravity motivation, my amplitude statement, because I'm looking at scattering, and CFTs, a picture of a little Millennium Falcon Cessna. Okay, so now what do I mean by the first part of the talk? Or why am I saying this, and why do I have a Disney logo that's not quite a Disney logo, if one could see? This is supposed to be an academic tree. And now we're gonna try to figure out into the woods and through the trees. What I mean by that, how does what I'm doing fit into what the quantum fields and strings people do? And so to preface this, this is more of a hobby than a scientific result. So anyone who does data analysis and wants to give me advice on networks can tell me where I'm wrong and not. I'm happy to take advice here. So great, okay, so I said that the second half of my talk, or the point of this talk, given the title of said panel, was that I wanted to say how the CHI fits into strings. Okay, so one could ask, what is string theory? What does it mean anymore to say I'm a string theorist? I have a hard time like embracing that even. So a better question to ask is maybe who is strings? And there's various ways that one could try to ask this question. Luckily, we have a lot of data on ourselves because, of course, we want to get cited, so our publications are all kept track of in this beautiful InspireHep. Inspires is like one of the first databases, I guess, online. And you can also use Archive, I guess, but this one, like Spots More, it's easier to work with. So we have, say, the past 3 years, I want to see, my goal is to figure out who I'm going to invite to strings, who I'm going to invite to talk, yada, yada. So I can say, well, the first thing is HepTH. We basically mean anybody in HepTH, and then you can refine that a little bit. So if I just said, given some date range, so you can learn how like, to search this stuff, how many people, how many papers, that's a starting point. So last 3 years or so, we have about 9.1 thousand people, and I'm restricting to less than 10 authors. And as you can see, my name is like one little thing there, so just to give a sense of scale of that's a lot of people. But I've, you know, there's a lot of larger institutions. So then that's kind of HepTH recent. That's not necessarily, and it's also basically, so this is anybody who in the last 3 years has had a HepTH paper on the archive with less than 10 authors. Now what I want to do is, well, who is a string theorist? Probably anybody who wants to attend strings. So you have these like lists of attendees. And so if we merge that, you actually don't miss too many people. So some people kind of do condensed matter. In the last couple of years, we don't want to miss out on them at all. So you go to the major conferences, get their names, reverse search for the Inspire buys, and you add a couple hundred more people. Now, when you look at this, there's really a lot of people just entering the pipeline. So it's slightly funny, I guess, to appreciate how many people are trying to be string theorists, or just for like, you know, maybe dabbling in it amongst their other things. So there's really like half of us. If I put an IR cutoff right around 50 HepTH citations, so again, this is a little bit of a restricted data set. This is missing out, for instance, like I merged it with things where added like pre-archive stuff, so you really appreciate that this is a log scale on this axis, and that one is like Ed on the right. So essentially, if I wanted to impose an IR cutoff around 50 citations, I get rid of half of us, and so the ballpark of about 5,000 active people is similarly accurate. And if I want to get a sense of how big my field is, then well, how important I would be as an author, there's this H index, which is whatever, like how many papers you have with that many or more citations. So if you try to do that for a field, how many authors with that many or more citations? We're about 1,000, 1,200 people. So it's a small group of people, even if you include the 5,000. We're like a big high school. If you wanted to like fund this high school or something like that, you can think of it not that bad. And a lot of people's emails are online, so you can even try to find a directory of everybody. Okay, so now let's take those top people, because I was scared about how things would scale up, but I'm not so scared. I think I could actually try to just do it with everybody, and look at who's worked with who to try to see if I can see what people are doing in our field. And so there's people who actually do this legitimately. And so this is me playing around with InspireHub and not knowing what I'm doing necessarily, but the links on the bottom are like people who've done studies of kind of collaboration networks. And to keep in mind, the one thing about I encourage people to just have fun with this, is that you care about the people in your field, and so you can ask questions that are a little bit more fine-grained than what you would see when people are just basically trying to see what's the size of the clusters, like how many degrees of Kevin Bacon in a given field. Like, those are very coarse-grained features of these networks that people normally care about in those types of studies, rather than literally like who's working with who, and what fun questions you can ask there. Okay, so I have all these authors from these like top 1.2 thousand people, and I demand that they've had at least a quarter of their papers be HepTH in the last 10 years, and look at who they've worked with over the last 10 years, and weight by number of joint papers, because if you weight by citations, you end up getting like the really famous people always get cited. There's like a feedback loop, and they kind of get grouped in a way that doesn't distinguish what I know to be the things I do. Okay, so then you can use some fancy Gephi network analysis here to find who's working with you, and you roughly see, and I think this needs to be fine-tuned more, kind of what the largest things people are doing. So when I say holography, this is mostly it from qubit people. For some reason, amplitudes and bootstrap get linked together. And when I say strings, like this is what a string theorist would be willing to call a string theorist. And then there's a lot of cosmology for HepTH, I guess, or some weird string stuff that maybe we can like figure out exactly who it is. But where the faculty who are organizing strings fit in here is you got Rob, Alex, and me up in the holography group, Davide, Jaume, and Kevin in strings, or however I called it, and Freddie and Pedro in this amplitude bootstrap group. And basically, I say there's two things I learned from this. The first thing is that my choice of name for Celestial Holography Initiative fits well with what I was basically binning us in, because I'm one of the purple dots. And this is also useful if I wanted to try to cluster people to see, like I want to make sure the invites for who's talking is like distributed commensurately with the field. Okay. So what's more fun about how CHI fits into this is you can look at where the celestial people fall, or people that I would consider are working on celestial now. And nicely, even though I'm grouped with the holography people, you do have people from more like formal sides and also amplitudes and bootstrap joining the fold. So that's where I wanted to go. I would say that completes for me the second half of the talk, which is, I guess, the forest for the trees. And thank you, guys. Exactly. Not surprisingly.
Amazing. Who has the cube? I have another one here.
Okay.
So the scheme of the program is to do CFT on asymptotically flat space times. My question is, on cosmological scales, can we think of our space-time to be asymptotically flat?
No, I see. What I would do is I would say that you want to, like on cosmological scales, you want to probably look at like some patch of like global de Sitter and have a different conformal boundary. But you run into issues that you already don't see in like ADS CFT in flat space holography, which is like how do you deal with in or out? Or like you have like out correlators instead of correlators on the like space-like boundary in the de Sitter case. So I would say, personally, I would just treat them as separate programs, but there's still something to be learned because you run into subtleties that you would run into in that case when you try to generalize ADS CFT. So.
Thank you.
More questions?
Hey, Sabrina. Just a curiosity, are there celestial holographers doing cosmology? If I saw correctly, the dots you had at a certain point, in the cosmology side, there were no dots.
I know, right? I know. But the thing is, I also don't know. I'm kind of trying to figure out the right name for that group of people, because it definitely includes like Eva and like Lindy and Kalosh. But so yes, there weren't, and that makes sense because like by definition, we're basically not like, we're assuming this cosmological constant is zero. So it's like, I understand why. But I also am not sure that I've labeled that group, because it was like Zweibeck was, okay, anyway.
I mean high energy cosmology where we don't care about.
No, but they do, no, because right there, most of those people are doing like vacuum decays and things like that. Like it's a different type of problem, but.
I was just amusing notices that were not, the magenta dots were cosmology, right?
Say again?
The dots that are not colored, the magenta, were cosmology.
Yeah. Most of them were.
Okay.
But like not cosmology, like cosmology here, like cosmology for high energy theory. So
sure.
I can list some of the names, but like Linda.
No, no, anyway, yes, thanks a lot.
Yeah. It's time for the panel.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, sorry, no, you can ask a question.
Just wondering if we can learn something about S-matrix with the mass. So usually this celestial holography is associated with IR effects,
yeah.
Right? What about QFT with the gap?
So there's no problem like strictly applying it to future time-like infinity. The issue is just that it's a lot, like, mechanically, you seem to get less bang for your buck. But actually, it's no problem. If we go and zoom near I plus here or I minus here, you essentially have a hyperboloid's worth of ways to approach future time-like infinity, and that's natural because it's essentially saying if I have a definite momenta, that direction of my momenta is some senses, or like the momenta I could be going in sweeps out that hyperboloid. So you can just do kind of this Green's function, which takes you from a definite momentum eigenstate that's massive to the celestial sphere, and so we can still do this dimensional reduction even if it's not naturally phrased as some sort of like base of a light cone. And so it's fine. The only thing is the question is, like, what do you gain from that? I feel like there's more mileage that's been made in the IR stuff. And so besides that and the fact that you only have to do one integral instead of three integrals to get the change of basis, people have spent most of their time in the massless thing. But we want everything.
Okay, there are no more questions. Yes. Thanks, Sabrina, once more.